This is CliffCentral.com. Auto Central, powered by Auto Trader on CliffCentral.com.
Right, folks, good morning. Welcome to Auto Central, brought to you by Auto Trader, your trusted motoring marketplace. Full lineup this morning, but not such a full studio. I think the traffic has got...
Hashtag load shedding.
Hashtag load shedding. Hashtag chaos. Robots out. No police. It's beautiful out there.
Lovely.
How are you, Lawrence?
No complaints. Had a good weekend.
Yeah, I see Martin sent a message saying he's running late. Traffic lights and chaos on the highways. It took me over an hour to get to the studio this morning.
Oh.
And some schools are on holiday, so...
Oh, yeah. The government schools are closed.
Government schools are closed.
Yeah.
They're all government schools, aren't they? Not really. Sometimes. Anyway, well, let's kick into it. When the other guys arrive, we'll say hi, hellos. But we don't have too much time to waste. So let's kick off. I see, let's start with this first story. I mean, Porsche as a brand is one of the most iconic car brands in the world. Even if the average layman cannot, you know, tell you exactly what the different types of Porsche, you know, models are, he'll be able to probably identify that is a Porsche. I mean, I think it's synonymous.
It has one of those iconic silhouettes.
Correct.
You just need to draw a line on a piece of paper and people will be able to tell you, that's a 911.
That's a 911, ready to go. And therefore, one of the few car manufacturers that has been able to build a hallowed image for its brand. In fact, the brand itself may have outgrown the cars that it produces. Porsche Design is an in-house design brand from Porsche, and this sub-brand deals with the development, manufacture, and sale of several lifestyle products from Porsche. I mean, I think we've all seen it. I mean, we know that Porsche, you know, they make shoes. There's Porsche shoes. There's obviously
A lot of motor Porsche manufacturers. Everything on this, so you can get shoes made by BMW, you can get jackets made by Mercedes-Benz, and wine glasses made by Lamborghini, whatever, take your pick. Ferrari is probably one of the bigger culprits there, but yes, you take a look at some of these pictures of what they're building, and you're like, I can't make the connection between car manufacturer and building architects.
Well, I mean, geez, like, so hello, George, how are you?
Good, and you?
Yeah, good, thank you.
Howdy, George.
Sorry, got stuck outside talking to
did you?
Gareth and Mina.
Okay, cool. And traffic for you this morning, fine?
Yeah, no, it was fine.
Really?
Yeah, no, it was fine. Everyone else seems to be having
mine was a meh. Yeah. It was an absolute meh.
Not meh.
Is that a new word?
Meh. No.
Meh. I know meh as M-E-H,
meh. No, like nightmare. It was just a meh.
Nightmare. Yeah. Okay.
It's a Durban thing. We wouldn't understand.
N-I-G-H-T, M-E-H, not meh.
Not me.
It's not me.
Anyway,
Porsche. So Porsche have actually now kind of been branched out even more. So Porsche Design is now also branded onto the real estate market. Luxury branded apartments, penthouses, and mansions are the new big deal, and it's exactly what billionaires are into these days. So a brand apartment commands a premium of over 30% when compared to a non-branded apartment, and luxury brands like Porsche are cashing in on this. So these guys Porsche have actually gone and built the Porsche Design Tower at Miami Beach. And this is obviously a perfect example of, you know, what money can buy you today if you are
if you actually read this.
No, exactly. It's insane.
You can drive into your apartment.
And there's space for 6 cars in your apartment.
Well, if you've got the kind of money for this.
So, I mean, we spoke last week about all the different garages and stuff, and it's funny that this, you know, stories come up, but you literally pull into the basement, your car is then taken up to your room or whatever it is, it gets shifted across, and bang, your Porsche is in your apartment with you as you, you know, have a look at the...
When your visitors, like plebs, have to park downstairs in the basement.
Yeah. No, it's crazy. But I mean, you know, there's a market for it.
Hey, if you've got cash to buy, you know,
and
this
it is in
stuff,
Miami,
then by all means do it.
Yeah, so the Porsche Design Tower offers world luxury amenities to the residents, includes a heated pool with attendants to serve food and beverages, Porsche design carts for residents to purchase Porsche branded goods, and fine dining restaurants. The
personal wine locker in
Wine locker in the lobby. Petrolheads never get bored in the Porsche Design Towers. Residents have access to a simulator room which houses professional racing simulators. And the list goes on and on and on. Fitness, yoga rooms, hair, nail salon, cold and hot saunas, and separate lounges for men and women.
Did you ever watch that movie called Skyscraper?
No.
With old The Rock in it.
Mm-mm.
It sounds very much like this. It's an entire suburb in a Yeah, a vertical living space.
So the most recent price fetched for an apartment in this Porsche Design Tower is $6.7 million.
Pocket change.
Meh. Crazy. Anyway, meh. Yeah. Next story, and my machine is doing fantastic things here today. Have you got the run in front of you there?
Let me just check. Yes.
Workers in the SA automotive sector have a stake.
Yeah, must have a stake. And this is from NUMSA, so the National Union of Mine Workers, pretty much saying that, you know, the guys that are, you know, in the factories and, you know, building the cars and working with the metal, they want a stake in the rollout of the South African automotive master plan. So vehicle sales in the country, we know, flatlined over the past few years. And
it's partially their fault.
It is part. Well, look, I think it's you know, if you go into the story, I think what they're asking for is justified. But on the flip side, you know, what the automobile guys are saying is that, you know, we're happy to invest, but we want a workforce that is actually dedicated and part of our solutions to build a bigger industry.
Set fire to this.
Well, exactly. Or, you know, or hold it ransom if things go wrong, you know. So you got to take the ups, you know, with the downs. So, I mean, I don't know. Where do you draw the line in the sand here? Because I think everybody should get a piece of the pie at the end of the day. But you've also got to be as honest and dedicated and hardworking to make sure that pie that you're baking is a big one. Do you know what I'm saying? So I don't know. So there seems, but I mean, this is not the first time this has happened.
Well, we are in that year when it now comes time to go back to the bargaining table. So yeah. We'll see.
Hey,
what happens.
I mean, there's a company in the world who does this, successfully does it. Mm. So the model does exist.
Yeah.
And that's called Amazon. Okay. So Amazon very, very often, well, in the last year particularly, gives shares to employees as compensation. So instead of paying the salaries, so you know, if these guys want a stake in the businesses,
yep.
Okay, what are you going to give up? What are you going to give up for it?
Well, I suppose the only thing they can give up is part of their pay,
part of their salary, right? Okay, because everybody has to pay their way. That's a fact of life. So what are they going to be willing to give up?
Mm.
And Amazon does this very successfully. They don't pay the salaries that are necessarily market related, and at the end of the year they give the employees shares. Okay, employee can go and sell the shares, do whatever they want, keep the shares, you know, offload some of them, what a fish paste. But the point is that business continues to grow. So therefore, the shares that those employees get continues to increasing value.
Yeah.
So the model is possible. You know, it's just it has to be underpinned by consistent growth. Now you can see the automotive vehicle industry isn't growing.
Well, it's not growing, but I mean there are plans to make it obviously grow. So it says that SA Automotive Master Plan will come into effect, aiming to increase local content of South African built cars to 60% by value from the current 34. I mean, that's like 22.6% additional growth. And I see our export. We have exported more cars, because we're going to get into this in the next story. We've exported more cars this year than we have over the previous 2 years, which I think is a good sign for the industry as well, which means, you know, there's obviously, you know, we're sending metal overseas, and that's good for us. So I think if they can see that there's a, you know, there is growth and there is opportunity, and if these guys are happy to sacrifice, like you're saying, George, you know, a little bit of money now, but to get a little bit
to get a benefit at some point down the line, because at the end of the day, those are businesses. They need to make a profit and they need to grow.
Sure.
You know, so it's all fair and well saying, you know, I want a stake in a particular business.
Mm.
But you can't get that for free. It doesn't come for free.
Absolutely.
You know,
you need to buckle down and work for it.
You got to work for it. You got to add value, and you can't buy it on the basis of future value either, because that's what often people think can happen is you can say, oh, I want to share in the business, but the value I'm going to add in the future is X, Y, and Z. It doesn't work like that.
Yeah, because you can't guarantee that.
Pay now.
Yeah, you got to pay now.
You got to pay now. Yeah. You got to cough up now. You know. So what are you willing to give up in order to get, you know, to be part of the party?
Yeah. So I see there's a quote here by a gentleman by the name of Mervyn Woodley, who is the chief executive of Atlantis Foundries. whose company makes engine blocks for export at its Cape Town plant. And he agreed that wages need to rise. But
no, that's fair enough, but that's different.
Sure, but he also said employees must become accountable, saying issues like sick leave were constantly abused.
Yeah, so my grandmother died for the third time this year.
Jeez, like, how many lives she got? None.
You'd be surprised.
Really?
Yeah.
Strong old lady, huh?
Yeah,
there we go. Anyway, so that's some news out of the motor industry. And then I see big numbers. Here is how many cars, buggies, and SUVs were produced in South Africa. So although 2018 has come and gone, the auto industry will remember the year that was as pretty tough, especially for local vehicle sales. SA produced more new vehicles in 2018 year on year. A total of 610,854 new vehicles were produced across all sectors of the market. And this obviously includes, you know, LCVs, HCVs, etc. etc. So I mean that's a very positive sign, as wouldn't you think so?
Yeah,
exporting more cars.
It's more money coming in.
It's more money coming in, and if they're planning to grow the industry, there could be more jobs down the line. And I think there is a, like they say, there is a, with that SA Automotive Master Plan to grow our percentage to up to 60%.
Well, I mean, I think that many of the automotive manufacturers from around the world will see South Africa as a place where they can make cars rather cheaply. Mm. What they need is the assurance that they can.
Yeah.
And that they aren't going to be subject to every 3 years
unions fighting and
fighting over whatever.
Yeah.
Well, it's always going to happen, hey, Lawrence. I mean, it happens overseas. It happens here. You know, there's always going to be these debates and arguments, and they're good because it keeps everyone on their toes. It keeps everyone honest. It keeps everybody going in the right direction. It's just, you know, the mechanisms that are in place in order to manage those arguments and debates, you know, maybe something that makes it seem harder than what it really is, you know. So it's not a case that it's the wrong thing. It's not the wrong thing, you know, because otherwise you will get things like dictatorships and abuse of capitalism, all that stuff, and that's what you don't want either. So it's got to be somewhere in the middle, in my opinion, you know.
I think they've got to draw the line in the sand up front, though, with these guys, to say if we can get to point A, you all get X, Y, and Z.
And everybody's got to understand, you've got to give your pound of flesh.
Yes.
You can't, it doesn't, nothing comes for nothing.
No, you can't just sit back.
You know, the automotive sector in South Africa, there's a very, very large trickle down. It's not just a factory making cars.
Yeah.
It's all the suppliers that supply that factory. Yeah. And all of the suppliers that supply those suppliers. Mm. It goes way further than just a factory in PE.
Yeah.
Or in North of Pretoria. There are so many other industries that supply the motor industry.
Well, 8% of our GDP is from, and not just from the manufacturers themselves, but all the, you know, like the add-ons and the...
So, yeah, I would like to see it grow. And, you know, we can sort of tell why there's been growth. Mm. You know, with things like the new BMW X3, that's locally produced for global markets.
Yeah.
And you know how popular the X3 is.
Yeah.
So they must be rolling those things off in the thousands.
Well, you know, let's hope, man, that long continue and grow. Right. You'll probably have a little bit more insight on this, but the 8th generation VW Golf has been delayed until 2020. The 8th generation Volkswagen Golf was meant to have come on stream later this year, but now it has been delayed until early 2020, according to Automotive News Europe. So the German newspaper Bild recently reported that the engineering teams were experiencing some technical bugs related to the advanced interior technology that is being introduced in the new hatch, including the fully digital cockpit system. And this is obviously going to ensure that the car is permanently online. But Volkswagen are saying this is not the reason, and they're really just holding it back, and they want to launch it with a bang in the new year.
Yeah, because there's absolutely nothing wrong with the 7.5 that's currently doing the rounds, and the GTR, and the R. They're all pretty much top of the game at the moment, and the only thing that's really going to push past that is the introduction of really driverless technology, technology, digital, everything. So we'll see. I think they may be having a look at what the markets are doing in terms of SUVs and buggies, and they're also looking and saying, you know what, Maybe things like the T-Cross and the T-Roc and the TCR and et cetera, et cetera. Maybe focus on those a little bit first.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens. But, I mean, it's always exciting when there is a new Golf. I know the guys go crazy for them in this country.
Yeah.
So
it just means it's good news for us because then the market gets flooded with 7s and 7.5s that are going for a song.
Going for a song. So how's this story? This was more stupid than it was criminal, a prosecutor told the judge. So there's two guys, Damien and Bailey Roy, planned to drive from Nova Scotia in Canada to Mexico. So literally across America with no identification. They were in a car that didn't have license plates, and they were carrying 21 jugs of gasoline. They got to their first border crossing, and there was a 12-hour standoff because they thought it was a terrorist attack.
The words stupid come to mind.
I mean, we were chatting off air. Who would absolutely do that? I'm all for going on road trips and planning, and this is a lekker adventure, but I mean, You absolutely have to have...
Are you just trying to tempt fate, or are you just being stupid?
Yeah, so I mean, you know, so Damien 22 and Bailey 21 thought they had all figured out. According to the Washington Post, they loaded up a just-purchased, undocumented 1967 Buick Skylark with many gallons of gas, with the intention of driving from Canada to Mexico without stopping at any U.S. gas station. The brothers reportedly did not have any sort of identification. So using paper maps, they planned to cross the border illegally on some back roads. Instead, they still ended up at a major border crossing. This is where this massive 12-hour lockdown and all border traffic redirected. So these are...
Were they Canadian or were they American?
Freaking objective?
They were going on a road trip.
Yeah, but without identification. So, what, you know, there's got to be some kind of, like, stupid idea behind that. Like, oh, let's see if we can get across the border without any identification. I mean, how dumb can you be?
You'd probably find they were going to do this, and they'll probably record it and try and put it out on social media when they get to Mexico and be
15
like,
minutes of fame.
15 minutes of fame, yeah. So,
because America, they're going to get shot.
Yeah. So it says here the brothers were frozen in fear and indecision, or then again, maybe they were just, you know, pretty much just stupid or high on the gas that was in the back of their vehicle.
I'm going to go with high on the gas.
When the officers glanced into the back and noticed all the gas cans, leading to a 12-hour lockdown and all border traffic redirected, blah, blah, blah. So these actually just absolutely caused proper chaos. Proper chaos. Hello, Mart.
Hello, Ty.
How are you?
Yeah.
Okay.
There wasn't any traffic. Don't talk crap. You should have driven an electric car.
Hello, George. Nice to see you too.
She should come in. Was it bad? You had terrible. Obviously load shedding.
Load shedding in Pretoria and two accidents on the N1 South, apparently, which none of which I saw.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wah, wah, wah.
So that was fun.
That sounds like you had a really nice morning.
Yeah, you see, the thing is, Google Maps, there's one thing Google Maps cannot take into consideration, and that is load shedding.
Well, that's also true.
Watch this space.
Take it into the grid, actually.
So, you never know.
If someone from Google is listening, please look at the load shedding schedules as well.
Well, I don't even think those things are up to date and legit.
Nope.
Well, I mean, I read the load shedding flipping... a circular last night. My wife was really upset because you know, the load shedding, like, it's I can't even say I understand it, because, you know, the infrastructure needs to come right, but when it starts to affect you at a really, really deep level, you know, if you've got a sick child at home, yeah. and stuff,
babies don't like cold milk,
you know, so we've got a generator to power the house if the load shedding goes, but it's really, you can't run that generator overnight while you're sleeping, number one, and number two, it's a bit inconsiderate to run it at 1 o'clock in the morning.
It makes a hell of a noise.
It makes a noise, and the neighbors will wake up. So I read the circular, which was like, we thank you for bearing with us, and sorry for the inconvenience.
Yeah, no, that doesn't cut it.
No.
It doesn't count. Just save it, you know.
Yeah. Like, look, on the radio, I heard numerous times today President Ramaphosa's apology. And that's very nice and very sweet of him, but it doesn't change anything.
No, exactly. You know, an apology should come with action.
Yes.
Like, I'm sorry for doing this, but this is what we're doing, and then actually freaking do it.
Yeah.
I mean, not go on a rant.
So I happened to drive on the highway this morning, which is the way Waze brought me. It was the quickest route, and it was chaos. I cannot believe the number of, she's like, bad word. Rant over.
Combine that with
driving in the yellow lane.
Combine that with idiot drivers as well. Yeah.
Not taxis.
Yeah.
I had a whole bunch of 5 cent coins. I was like, I was ready to throw stuff out.
And after the N1 finally opened up after Allendale, every single lane had a truck in it, pottering along on the uphill at 50 km/h an hour.
Yeah.
Yay, fun.
Fun and games. Anyway, let's not bitch about
it. Well, I mean, load shedding, but the Google Maps and Waze don't take load shedding into account.
No. Yeah,
that's the bottom line.
Gentlemen, anyway. You must have had a fantastic Sunday yesterday, hey? All those engines revving and fast cars going around tracks and everything that's gone down in F1. Did you?
Oh yeah.
Okay, there we go. Oh, so you didn't have load shedding in the morning?
I do.
No, I did. I had load shedding in the morning. I ran the friggin' generator to watch the Formula One. Okay. I was like, you know what?
Live streaming the internet.
Yeah, I live streamed on my iPad until the start of the race. But here's what happened. So we wake up, and the build up started 5:30 in the morning.
Yes.
And the race started 7:10. So I was like, okay, I'm not going to run the generator at 5:30 in the morning. So I get up and, the build-up is not that exciting because I'd watched the qualifying the day before. So, and a lot of it is rehashed the same content.
Yes.
So I get up, I watch on my iPad. I'm sitting outside, and now it's silent because there's no flipping electricity. The load shedding's happened. And so nothing's happening. And I said to Kerry, well, should I start this generator? Because I want to watch the start of the race.
Absolutely.
And it's going to take like 2 or 3 minutes for, to go in the rigmarole of switching it on.
Yeah.
Fish
yeah.
So 7:00 comes. And I was like, flip, I don't want to start this. I'm still watching on my iPad. And I don't want to start watching the race on my iPad. I want to watch it on the bigger screen, on the TV. So I'm like, flip, I'm going to switch on this thing. But now I'm like, very considerate of the neighbors. It's loud. It's a Sunday morning.
Yeah, exactly.
Do I really want to be woken up by this engine at 7:00 in the morning? So it must have been about 7:05. I hear some other person start up their generator.
There we go.
Here's my chance.
Come on, George. I have a question here. How come you have a generator and not a power bank?
Because the power bank's cost versus the generator's cost is significantly different.
Yeah, I mean, it's electric.
You've got a very, very valid point. I've thought about it many, many times. To the point where, I actually want to install an inverter, because apparently an inverter, if you just run light things, can run lights and stuff for quite a while.
And the big screen TV as well.
And it can run your TV, because TV is really low in power.
Okay, well, let's get on to that. So I kicked up the generator.
Just in time, got back to my TV as the TV started up. They had been lining up for the start. And true as nuts, Hamilton was on pole. They get going, and Bottas passes him on the first straight, which I thought was brilliant. You just got a better getaway. That's it. But there was definitely something wrong with Hamilton's car, so I'm not defending, his performance, but definitely something wrong with his car. Definitely something wrong with the two Ferraris, because Bottas pulled a 21.5 second lead.
Yeah, he won. That was the margin.
Yeah, that was the margin of his win. He pulled a 21.5 second lead during the course of that race.
I mean, that's like half an hour if you're running a marathon.
Exactly. He was blisteringly fast. Took many, many fastest laps. And now they've introduced this new point system. 21 points.
Yes, and you get a point.
Year, and you get that 21 points across the races. You get 1 point for getting the fastest lap time.
Now, is that in the race?
In the race.
That's not for qualifying.
No, okay. In the race. So it's the fastest lap in the race, and you get one extra point. So Bottas was after the win and the extra point. And Verstappen was after getting second and getting the extra point. So Verstappen eventually passed Vettel. Definitely something wrong with Vettel's car. It remains to be seen. And now was chasing down Hamilton, because Hamilton was now second. This was after the fact, but Vettel decided to do the undercut, or try the undercut. Went into the pits because he was lapping a bit faster than Hamilton, and Hamilton would have kept him up. So he went into the pits, tried to do an undercut, put a yellow set of wall tires on, and came out of the pits, did an okay pit stop, But immediately Mercedes pitted Hamilton, which was clever to block the undercut.
Yeah, yeah.
And they managed to bring Hamilton out in front of Vettel. So so the places didn't change, so the undercut didn't work. But what was interesting for me is when they pitted Leclerc, which now is the new Ferrari driver, and he's really good, eh? He's the new Ferrari driver. They put him on a set of hard tires, and he came out and he did some of the fastest laps, which was surprising. So anyway, I'm not so sure.
He also did a little bit of grass cutting along.
Yeah, I did.
Well, there was at the start, huh?
At the start, Ricardo went.
No, there was a Ricardo.
Yeah, he lost his wing.
No, but Leclerc, during the course of the race, there were a couple of slow points, and he just cut across corners and zoom zoom all over the case, went cutting the grass on the side of the track.
Yeah, I think he's still getting used to that Ferrari.
Very much so.
Vettel's still more solid than him, although he can do similar lap times. Yeah. On the qualifying, Leclerc was a half a second behind Vettel, so half a second slower than Vettel. So Vettel's still faster in the Ferrari. But definitely something wrong with those Ferraris. As Lawrence said, Ricciardo went off, lost his front wing on the first corner, and then eventually retired, didn't finish the race. But Verstappen was on a flipping charge. He never managed to pass Hamilton, which I think he might have been able to do given a couple more laps. But he never managed to pass Hamilton. But here's the rub. Grosjean, which is now Verstappen's new partner in crime, was way back in the field, which tells you how good Verstappen is.
Yeah.
Because Grosjean Leclerc at least could keep pace with Vettel, but Grosjean was way back in the field. And then another interesting point that probably what Lawrence is about to say, and that was Raikkonen.
Absolutely.
Raikkonen qualified 6th.
His teammate was also languishing somewhere in 14th.
Which shows you that he's world championship material.
Yeah.
Talent.
Talent. And Ferrari was dumb to lose him. Absolutely dumb to lose him. And, Leclerc might be of similar caliber.
Green.
But he's still green. Yes, he's absolutely green. So those were the interesting things. What surprised me a lot, and I think I don't want to make excuses for the guy, but Ricciardo, I think, just got a bad a bad deal yesterday.
Yeah, I don't know what he was thinking, but he managed to get himself squeezed off the track and then just hit a very big clump of grass by the service road, and it ripped the front wing off the car, underneath the car, and out the back.
Yeah, I mean, if you start a race like that, it's going to be
chaos. It's going to be chaos. So I mean, some of the speak at the moment is that because he's a late breaker, he's getting used to the brakes on that car. So he's kind of
had all these months of testing.
Yes, exactly.
To sort it out, you know.
So in the end, Bottas won. Hamilton 2nd and Verstappen 3rd.
I think it is going to be a very interesting and very long season.
So the point standing at the moment is Bottas obviously on 26 points, getting the 1 point after that fastest lap. Hamilton on 18, Verstappen 15, Vettel on 12, Leclerc on 10, Magnussen on 8, Hülkenberg on 6, Raikkonen got 4 points, which is the part of the surprising bit, and then Stroll 2 and Daniel Kvyat in the Red Bull 1.
So what's that? 1 down, 21, 20 to go.
Yeah.
21 this season, eh?
Yeah.
And then Lawrence, you were saying something really interesting about the MotoGP
from last week. It was Qatar, MotoGP, and Ducati won. They greased everybody by miles.
Okay.
And then all the other motor manufacturers got together and protested them. Because apparently they have illegal aerodynamic devices on their motorcycle.
Yeah, I saw about that.
It's actually a tiny little carbon fiber winglet attached to the bottom of the swing arm that directs air onto the back tire. And they now claiming it gave them an unfair advantage, but yet it's not illegal. And it's because it's attached to the swing arm, not the fairing. So we'll have to see what happens. But anyway, Ducati, the ones to keep an eye on for MotoGP this season.
Well, a good start to them. And then just some news here. Motorsport legend Wayne Taylor included into the SA Hall of Fame. Excuse me. He's London-born Wayne Taylor, who won the 1986 South African Formula 2 Championship before leaving South Africa in 1989 to seek fame and fortune racing internationally, was recently inducted into South African Hall of Fame. He joined Sorrel van der Merwe, the brothers Jody and Ian Schechter, and Ferrari designer Rory Byrne as the only motorsport inductees. So I think that's... nice to know that guys are still...
Motorsports is still there.
It absolutely is still there. I mean, it says here, this oak What did he win? He completed 13 times in the Le Mans 24-hour race, and he placed fourth in 1987. So he's clearly a really, really good driver.
Yeah, and
so
he's been going for a while.
And have you really?
Mm. 1986 Formula 2 champion, and obviously that was not his first season.
Yeah.
So you're talking about a career spanning about four decades, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, talking about spanning four decades. Mm. Mm. Back to Formula 1 again. Or Charlie Whiting.
Oh, he died.
Yeah, shame.
Yeah. At 66, which is...
It's young.
Flipping young in today's world. I don't know what the cause was and whether this was a long time coming, but it's very young.
So, yeah, condolences. That's odd. Anything else you want to say on that?
Well, no, motorsport's done and dusted until two weeks from now.
We were talking about racing and stuff, and... I wanted to just bring this up, but this time last week, gentlemen, we were all at Kyalami for the Auto Trader South African Car of the Year test days.
Fun, fun, fun.
It was such a lacquer day out. It really, really was. I mean, to be able to...
Yeah, I was a little bit taken aback because I'm on the side of the track with cameras, busy taking photos and video and stuff, yeah. And here comes Ty in a Jimny. You're not supposed to be testing the cars. The jurors are.
Well, you know, I suppose when you got to make friends with the right people, and it was lovely to take. I mean, I wasn't racing the Jimny. Obviously, I'm not qualified to race the Jimny, but
I don't think anyone is.
It was really a fun car to drive.
Did you manage to get into all the cars, George?
I didn't. I got into a number of them, but not all of them.
And you? Okay. Did you? Well, I mean, obviously well, you I've were forming all
of
and
them.
Stuff.
I've driven all of them except the Cayenne, but I'm working on that.
I went in, I think the only car that I didn't get into was the Lexus and the Swift. That was it.
Otherwise, you only got into those two?
Those are the only two I didn't get into.
Didn't get into, okay. Yeah. Okay.
I drove the Jimny, but then I was with Journos.
Yes, through the
but,
rest.
But I must say, the highlight for me was getting into that Honda Civic Type R with... what's it? Ekman Stipple, eh?
Ekman Stipple.
Oh, you're still alive. I'm surprised.
Like an absolute animal. It was such a rush. Eh? And he really, I mean,
there are a couple of photos floating around social media of Ekman driving some of the cars on the skid pan.
Yeah.
Doing three wheel
turns. I think, yeah. I might have been in one of those cars at one of those times.
The man can pedal.
The man can drive. And I must just say, you know, I think hats off to everybody. I think the day went, you know, it was really, really smoothly run. It was good to see the journos interacting with the cars, and they put those cars through their paces. They really do. This is not just a case of let's flip a coin and, you know, I'm going to sit back at my behind my desk and actually go and choose which car I like and see who wins. But these guys put every single car through their paces. It was a great day out.
No, I was suitably impressed that these guys are and their driving capability. There were one or two judges where I've been into motoring for a very long time, the better part of 25 years. Mm. So, and people often are surprised at the amount I know about cars, given that I don't talk in the journo circles as much. but I probably know less than what Martin does. But, be that as it may, I think I know how to drive a car, yes. And what racing lines to take.
Yeah.
Not that I would win a race, but I kind of know the racing lines. And there were one or two journalists who just... didn't
have a clue.
Have a clue.
But I suppose those would be all kind of lifestyle journos.
Yeah,
well,
it could be.
There's a mix
be.
Of
and you know, like the ultimate of ultimate no goes when you're racing around a corner is braking.
Yeah.
Do not brake in a corner.
You brake in and you accelerate through.
Accelerate through the corner. Just let the car drift if it needs to drift. If you really, really need to brake to stop yourself from hitting a barrier, fine, then brake.
Yeah.
But don't brake in the freaking corner. So I was watching. Not that any of the guys that took me, suffered from this driving error. But I was watching and I'd say 99% of the journos know how to take racing lines and know how to drive properly, and I was very impressed. But there were those,
I'm sure
maybe
Lawrence would agree.
Jurors.
Could be.
I'm sure Lawrence would agree, but there are some journalists on launch events.
We know.
We just know already. Don't get into a car with them.
Yeah. You don't pick him as a driving partner, and you try and pair up before it gets to the point where you get assigned a car, because if you end up with one of the guys that can't drive.
Well, is that a prerequisite to be a motoring journalist? I mean, should you? I mean, do you have to be able to write and explain the car
is,
and get it across?
There is no prerequisite. You need to be able to write.
I would say probably one of the best things is to be able to get your point.
Yes.
Well, the things that you feel about the car. Based on fact, across to people who might be interested in that car.
Correct.
That is the main part about it, is explaining the ins and outs of the car to somebody. Once you can do that and you can piece together a 800 to 1,000 word story that doesn't sound like gobbledygook, then you're good to go.
Yeah.
Once you can do that and you are writing for a publication or whatever, then you should really seriously start thinking about
improving
your driving skills. Yeah.
Because anybody can drive. Any idiot can get behind the wheel of a car and go.
Yeah.
But it's knowing what to do when a car does something.
Yeah.
Learning what to expect when you do something to the car.
Mm.
So if you're going to go into a corner too hot, you should know. You're going in too hot. You're going out the other side too quickly. You're going to catch the tires.
You know,
Lawrence,
you know what? At least this means that the motoring journalism profession is actually fairly representative, because we have our share of idiots as well.
Yeah.
Do you know what? Do you know what the best thing is to learn racing lines on? In my opinion, anyway, from my experience, besides a simulator, is a motorbike.
Yes.
You can't get a freaking racing line wrong in a motorbike.
Because if you do, you're going to die.
Yeah.
If you do, you're going to fall off.
Yeah.
So a motorbike teaches you, in my opinion, the racing line. Because if you're going to go around a track not on the racing line on a motorbike, you have to be going very slowly.
Yeah.
So it almost forces you to take the racing car.
There's a lot of physics involved in it, and you have to understand the dynamics of a car and what a car, how its weight is going to shift and what it's going to do when you go into a corner too fast. Is the back end going to break out? Is the front going to understeer? And these are the things that you learn over time. This, you can't just become a motoring journalist and say, okay, I know immediately
and
what this car's going to do.
Not all cars are created equal, so
they don't
all drive the same.
The Honda Civic that you drove 5 years ago is nowhere near as competent as the Honda Civic that is now currently on track.
Besides that, what fascinates me with drivers, and then let's get onto the positive side of Coty, is taking the car around the track, not having driven the car on a track, and then thinking you know the breaking point. You don't.
No. Yeah.
You've got to do two laps in that car. The first lap is a scouting lap. You go, and you go reasonably quickly and break, you know, where you reasonably think the breaking point may be. You need to kind of push the limit a little bit, but not maximize that that limit, so that you can find the breaking point, you know, around that track. Otherwise you're going to get it seriously wrong. And the car's going to be upside down. But fortunately, we didn't have any of those.
We had none of those. So it was an.
One thing I've learned, is that high performance cars, almost all of the high performance cars that we have currently available in the country, you as a driver will give up way before that car does.
Yes.
That car can do things that you could never do.
That's very true, because braking in corners, the car can handle because of the electronics.
Yeah.
So
you can go into a corner hot as hell and just jam your foot on the brake. The ABS will take care of everything.
Yeah.
Switch the traction control off.
Ooh,
and then you separate the boys from the men.
Yep.
Yeah. I must say, doing donuts on that skid pan was also...
on three wheels in a Jimny.
That little car, it's amazing. You know what, to be honest, I think it's a fun car. It's got no space. I mean, it's got zero appeal to me in terms of something that I'm going to go and spend money on. But I think they've just, I don't know, it's a car that's
a cool lifestyle vehicle. Yeah,
absolutely. So just quickly while we're talking, that, I mean, we know that the main event and the reveal of the winners on the 4th of April.
Can't
we
wait.
Have got social campaigns running on AutoTrader, on AutoTrader.co.za at the moment, where we're giving away 10 invitations to obviously very, very lucky individuals, because this is a closed event. And again,
it's auspicious.
It is auspicious, and it's a premium. It is the premium car competition event in South Africa. And we're really, really happy to be
a part of it.
Check your social media. Go on to AutoTrader.co.za news and reviews. Go and check out the AutoTrader Cody website, and all your necessary information will be there. But getting into
additional topical stuff. George, you wrote a really interesting blog post the other day with regards to, you know, I suppose it is negative, but, you know, you're sitting at a robot and the next thing someone's pointing a gun at you. What do you do?
And, yes. Well, that's a reality in this country, isn't it?
It is a reality in this country. So I think it's something that we want to talk about, because what it does is it leads us into the next story about some new patent that Toyota, Toyota have put together. So there were some tips there. I don't know if you want to
Yeah, I mean, I wrote this a little while ago, but you know, if you're faced with you know, somebody pointing a gun at you, don't be a hero. I think that's flippant step number one.
Sure.
Don't try to be a hero.
Yeah.
Because any move you make could get you
shot
dead.
Yeah.
And that's never a good thing. So you know, it's hard to come back from. So the first thing is, you know, unless you really, really see an opportunity to get away, comply.
Sure.
Absolutely comply.
Yeah.
Because if you don't comply, that person holding the other end of that gun is in total control of your life.
Well, absolutely.
And that's never a good idea.
Yeah, I think that person
nine times out of ten they're more nervous than what you.
Well, this is the thing, and this is what I wanted to get to, because I think it's two important things that, you know, I've always been taught is, if that is the situation, never ever reach to take your seatbelt off because you want to get out of the car, because that could indicate to him that you're going for a pistol or getting a stick.
Well,
or
the best
a bat.
Thing is to talk to the guy.
Yes,
you know, or the person, say. Listen, yeah, in order for me to get out of the car, I need to take my seatbelt off. Is that okay? Yes, take the seatbelt off. You know, and at all times, keep your hands on the steering, show your hands.
Yeah.
Because that's where they get nervous.
Yeah.
And people, by and large, they don't want to shoot you.
No,
people don't want to kill other people by, you know, by their nature. Yes, there are some psychopaths out there that have that vindictive streak. But by and large, most of the time, if that gun's going to go off, it's because the guy got a fright or got nervous.
Yeah.
So don't give him a fright and don't get nervous.
And just try and remain as calm as possible. I think get out the car, walk away. Don't and leave your cell phone, leave your handbag, leave all that shit in your car.
All of that can be replaced.
Absolutely.
Your life cannot.
Your life cannot. So, yeah, I thought, you know, obviously, you know, we...
But don't get yourself in the situation in the first place by doing some defensive driving.
Yes.
You know, I say this all the time to a lot of people. Keep the car moving.
Yes.
A person can sprint at maybe 20-something kilometers per hour. What is the maximum sprinting speed of a human being?
What would that be?
Oh. Well, let's see.
30 k's an hour.
Yeah.
Carl Lewis.
Yeah.
Well, that's Carl Lewis. Maximum sprinting speed of a human being.
44.74. That was Usain Bolt.
Yeah, but that's Usain Bolt.
Is that
let's go.
That,
let's
is that what
let's go. Let's go. Let's go for people like normal people, right? That's Bolt's average speed. But
28 to 30.
Probably 28 to 30 k's an hour. But that's full sprint speed, hey?
Yeah, and you know? What? You're only going to do that for 100 meters. Yeah,
you're going to do that for 100 meters.
He did it for 20.
You know, that's maximum speed. So if you keep your car moving, I'd say at 15 k's an hour.
It's going to be 10 times harder for the guy
it's
to get up.
It's going to be very, very hard for somebody to do something to you. It's hard, hard. So slow the car down when you see a red traffic light. Don't race up to the freaking thing. And just keep the car moving. That's all I say.
Yeah.
So always keep the car moving. Even if it's at a very, very slow pace. And then the other thing is always keep an exit. So keep a gap in front of you. Don't get yourself boxed in. I never, ever park at a traffic light in the middle lane. Even if I have to change lanes after the traffic light, that's fine. I'll keep my car on the outer lane.
Because then the pavement becomes an option.
Pavement,
or the oncoming road, the traffic
it becomes an
lane,
option.
Sorry.
Give yourself options. Keep yourself, you know, with an exit in mind all the time. And keep aware. Don't get on your cell phone when you get to a traffic light.
It's a
bad idea.
Keep your windows up,
you know,
your doors locked.
Keep aware. Know exactly who's around the traffic light or around the intersection when you approach it. But the problem might be solved in the future.
Absolutely, because Toyota patent targets car thieves with tear gas. So over the years, there have been many interesting and innovative ideas for repelling car thieves.
The flamethrower was
my favorite.
I remember seeing that video. But basically what Toyota have done is the fragrance so they have the patent application reads, the fragrance generation section is configured to release a tear gas component inside the vehicle, and the controller controls the fragrance generation selection to release the tear gas component inside the vehicle in case in which an illegitimate engine start has been detected, and they're doing that all via mobile. So your car knows you getting into the car because it obviously picks up, it knows who you are, and it will pump out, the oaks that smoke vapes like cherry, cola, candy, floss, beautiful smell. But as soon as somebody that's dodgy gets into the vehicle, it's going to tear gas you. And I think that's quite lekker.
I think there should be tear gas. Too many, there's too many things that can go
too
wrong.
Too many things that are going to go wrong. Like
your ex-wife gets in the car, unrecognized.
Well, she swaps your cell phone
really
and the next thing
wrong?
You get tear gas, huh?
Sorry, I'm just being mean. But no, your kid climbs in the car, starts mucking about with the buttons. It doesn't recognize it. Psh, gas again.
Well, that's a mistake the kid will only make once.
Yeah, but you understand what I'm saying. I think it's great that they're thinking that way. It sucks that they have to, but there really should be a more fail-safe. Like I said, we loved the flamethrower. That was brilliant. You sit there, push a button on the steering wheel, roast the guy that's standing with a gun at your window.
Finished.
But yeah, they.
You're the real.
Oh no, can't be.
Can't be that. Can't be doing that. Anyway, so that's so interesting. We'll see what happens there if it ever does. It does happen. Mott, we're reviewing the
new BMW 3 Series.
Tell us about it,
So this is one of the most significant arrivals of this year. Especially in South Africa, where the 3 Series is effectively a legend. It's a new seventh generation 3 Series.
Yeah.
And it's an all-new design, though you'd probably never guess by looking at it.
That's the thing about BMWs. The design stays the same. They change a winglet, change the headlights, make a little bulge on the bonnet.
In their defense,
it still looks like a 3 Series.
It does look a lot cleaner, and it looks a bit meaner and more aggressive and assertive, rather, than the old one does. But the big news is under the skin. It's grown in every direction, except height. I mean, it's like literally 1 millimeter taller than before. But they've widened the
tracks. Sounds like me.
If you grow your hair.
No. There's no getting taller, just getting wider. So.
But this time around, they really focused on refinement and handling. So it's a lot sharper than the outgoing car. A lot sharper to drive. And it's actually a huge lot more comfortable when you compare it to the previous generation car in a similar configuration.
Yeah.
Now, the cars I drove in Cape Town were both equipped with 19-inch wheels, which does have a fairly negative effect on ride quality. But even so, it's better than the old one was on 18s.
Not if you're in Springs.
No, in Springs you don't care. The range launches in South Africa with four-cylinder engines only. There's a 330i. It's a 2-liter turbo petrol, so it's not a straight six. It goes like stink. Okay. I'm going to be brutally honest here. That thing has quite possibly already an excess of performance for normal road usage. So there's
thank you, BMW. Thank you.
But there's more to come. Yep. At the later stage, there'll be an M340i xDrive. So that's all-wheel drive in it. That thing has literally every single trick box or trick option.
And when
as
they released
standard.
The M5 with all of those trick boxes on it last year, man, what a car.
What a car. So, yeah. And if you start off from a base as good as this new 3 Series, that's going to be a great car. There's also going to be a 320i petrol. So with a detuned version of that 2-liter. And then on the diesel front, at the later stage, we'll see a 330D. And I think that will probably be the one to have, I think, 580 newton meters and 195 kilowatts. So, yeah, that's going to be really
the price
rapid.
Of petrol going where it is, diesels.
Yeah. Now, on that subject, the sensible money will go to the new 320D. Still only 140 kilowatts and 400 newton meters, so it's quite strong in itself. But it's been optimized to the point where you don't know that you're driving a diesel.
Okay.
You have to open the door to hear that typical clatter. So the noise insulation inside the car is truly, truly impressive.
Sure.
And again, it goes really, really well. I think 0 to 106.6 seconds.
Sure.
So that's pretty impressive for a 2-litre diesel, let alone a 2-litre diesel that's loaded with every single high-tech thing. And that's where the next bit comes in.
Yeah, I'm waiting for this big number that's coming my way.
They've upgraded every single part of the user interface from the dashboard, which is now a beautiful minimalist digital design. You'll see when you get it on test. And it's
Does it still have connected drive?
Yes.
Does it have a different version of connected drive?
Yes. It runs the latest. It runs the latest BMW user interface software. Right.
Gesture control.
Yeah, that's there, unfortunately.
Oh, I love gesture control. No, I don't like that little turning button thing with a touch screen on the top of it.
Now, it introduces something else as well, and they call it the intelligent personal assistant.
Hey, BMW.
Yeah.
What can I do for you today?
Except I tried that, and no matter what I did, I called, could not get this car to listen to me.
Oh, it doesn't like you.
Nope.
It wouldn't, just didn't get you.
I said, hey, BMW, and the car just point blank flat ignored me. But if I poke or make any kind of gesture, the radio would change stations or the volume would get turned off.
There's so many things to do in these cars. It's crazy. What does this thing go for?
Okay, so they launch at exactly the same price. Let me just make double sure here. 600 and come on. There we go. 649 before options and before special trim packages.
And there's no way you're getting a base model, so.
Nope. But
work on about 720
until end.
It's a lot of money for until, a T-Series.
Yeah, but hang on, until third quarter, you can get all sorts of special first edition type options thrown in for the same money.
Yeah.
So that helps as well.
Brakes, tires, wheels.
Is it value for money? Yes. No.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. And I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
If I'm going to take one example. The Mercedes A-Class. I drove in Cape Town end of last year. A200 with, 130 kilowatts, 120 kilowatts.
Base model, 500K. Start adding options. The one that we tested in our review, 720.
You see what I mean?
Mm. Yeah.
And the thing
200
is,
200 grand worth of options.
Yeah, this BMW comes with a lot of the nice stuff standard already. Okay. But you can add all sorts of other things. Amongst them, semi-autonomous driving up to level 4.
Oh, sure. Okay.
So it allows you to drive hands-off for limited time periods. Obviously, it depends on the legislation in the specific country, but the ability is there.
Sure.
Yeah, it shows a lot of luxury car features. I think that's probably, well, apart from the refinement and the driving pleasure, because it's really good to drive.
Yeah, I mean, BMW's always been, you know.
No, I mean, come on.
It's synonymous with luxury.
Yeah, the thing is, they've lost the driving pleasure plot a little bit on some of their models over the last decade or so. And it's so nice to see them return to form with this car. Because this feels like a proper BMW again. So that's the one thing. It's the refinement.
Yep.
It's the driving experience and the available technology that makes it really, really impressive.
How long will it be before the stuff that's in this new 3 Series trickles over into the X3?
Possibly with the X3's facelift.
Which should be within the year.
Yeah. X3 and X4 will get it very soon. And obviously the new X1. The new 1 Series will get it.
Because I'm in the current X3 at the moment on a test review, and it's... it's a nice mix of luxury and practicality.
Yes, yes.
So, yeah, that review will be up next week.
Okay.
So we'll talk about that the next show.
Awesome. Thanks, Mart.
All right.
Fantastic. Talking about new cars and releases, the world's first guilt-free hypercar has been unveiled at the Geneva International Motor Show. The Automobile Pininfarina's Battista Electric has the top speed that exceeds 350 kilometers an hour, making it one of the fastest road cars on the planet. I don't know if you guys have had a look at this vehicle, but it is absolutely breathtaking in terms of design. It says Pininfarina says the vehicle can accelerate from 0 to 300 k's an hour in under 12 seconds, which is...
yeah, I can believe it.
Super fast, and it can do about 450 k's on a single charge.
Do you think, I mean, you know, I think the question I ask is fantastic. It's electric. Is it going to, I mean, is there a market for the, overseas,
there
obviously.
There is.
For the supercar, yeah.
Yeah.
Supercar. The guys that have got the money, they will, because they're only going to make, what, 10 or 20
probably.
Things.
Sell half of them in Dubai.
What was the one that Hammond crashed up on the hill?
What isn't that, the Koenigsegg?
No, it was a Ricard, Polish.
Yeah.
They only made 10 cars, and he crashed one of them, so there's only 9 left in the world. So, you know, the exclusivity is there.
Yeah, and, it's about bragging rights.
Yeah.
It's about telling someone, I have something and you can't even get it, even if you have the money.
It's why people buy art.
Yeah.
Yes, because there's not
I have something that nobody else has. Or so, there's only 10 of these in the world, and, well, there's only 9 now.
But the people who buy these things most definitely don't care about guilt-free, associations or anything of that sort.
Because I get to take it to Cars and Coffee and show off and do a burnout, a silent burnout in the parking lot.
And get some Instagram influencer to come drive it in Dubai and then get some more publicity for your oil company.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you guys have got that all waxed, huh?
Solid. They are amazing cars, and the thing is, though, it's the tip of the spear.
Yeah.
That technology will eventually filter down into the everyday cars that we drive.
Yeah, I suppose it's got to start somewhere. Gents, just as we begin to wrap up, there was a story, and it said soon it would become almost impossible for car thieves to dispose of stolen cars, even after dismantling them. According to a toll report, to stop car thefts, the government has approved a new technology called microdots. Now, in my universe, this is not a new technology because I've heard about it before.
Yeah. Microdots have been in assembly cars for years.
So, microdot is a technology by which thousands of microdots are sprayed over the body of a vehicle. These smaller laser-etched dots contain nano-sized 0.5 millimeter particles that carry information like unique numbers, vehicle IDs, etc., etc. And these are obviously, the technology is widely used in several countries, including South Africa and the US, but South Africa has made it mandatory to have micro dots fitted to all vehicles sold since September 2012. So obviously the technology is not new.
It's just they're making it mandatory.
But I think they're making it, made it mandatory.
This so obviously is in India, so this is a new thing for India.
Micro dotting.
Yeah, this is a new thing for India now.
Do you think that, but I mean, I don't think, I mean, vehicle theft in South Africa is still pretty
relatively
hard.
Look, they're going to steal it. It's about what happens to the stuff after it gets done. So, the cops can walk into a body shop and see a whole bunch of fenders on the wall.
They can go and scan them.
Yeah. Oh, this one's from you're carrying stolen goods.
Yeah.
I mean, even if you want to register a used car now, it has to be microdotted before you can do that.
Yeah. And do you think you have to
supply the microdot certificate for this car with a car's registration document?
So I'm assuming that, I mean, how did you guys understand how the technology works? I mean, they're obviously spraying it onto the car.
Comes in an aerosol.
Yeah, and all the little microdots inside have got a little serial number on them. And you actually, I think Chad actually has a little attachment for his cell phone that you can put on the lens of your camera. And you can find a microdot.
It's a magnifier.
And you can actually read the serial number.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Jeez, luck.
The microdot's not that micro, let's put it that way. It's, you can't see it with a naked eye, but it's not nano.
Not nano.
It's a good thing. I hope that it does help along the way.
And bear fruit.
Yeah.
Exactly. Hello, ma'am. Here's your door. Thanks very much for coming.
We found your car or a piece of it.
There's a piece of it. Well, guys, listen, on that note, it is 10 o'clock again. It's been a fantastic show. Thank you very much for tuning in. As always, log on to news and reviews at autotrader.co.za. Go and have a look for our Cody competition. I can tell you now that if you do get invited to the event, it's going to be fantastic. Gents, thanks for being in studio, and I hope everybody has a magic week.
Thank you.
This is CliffCentral.com.